Thought for today. Optimists live longer than pessimists. I am an optimist. Optimists live longer than pessimists. I am an optimist. Optimists live longer than pessimists. I am an optimist. Yes, what does it mean to be an optimist? An optimist is always looking at the sunny side of life, always looking at the bright side of everything, the side where everything is in peace and harmony and joy and right action and truth and goodness. Why is that? Why is it that an optimist always looks at that? Because that's what an optimist is. He is someone who looks at the happy side of life. A pessimist, on the other hand, is someone who looks at the opposite side. A pessimist is a very important being to have in the world. A pessimist creates the problems that the optimist solves. A pessimist creates the problems that the optimist solves. Every time a pessimist comes up with a problem, the optimist says, "No problem. Here's the solution." And the pessimist says, "All right, but..." And they want to bring up some other one. And the optimist says, "Okay, here's that one." And on they go. The pessimist says, "Well, you know, the world is flat." And the optimist says, "Oh, really? Let's take a look at this here. We're a flat disk sliding through infinite space. And we're just sort of going around. Well, how can that be? All other objects in space are round. And we're a flat object? Now, if we were a flat object, you could see from here to there. You could see from Rome to England and wherever the outskirts of the world are. And they couldn't, because the world had a curve on it. And as soon as you got 15 miles away from standing on a 300-foot building, you couldn't see any further. On the flat land, you just can't see anything because there's a curve to it. And this was proven to the pessimist, and finally the pessimist agreed. Well, the Pope was about one of the greatest pessimists that ever lived. And the Pope said, "No, these things are not so. There is not gravity. There is not all these things. They're all acts of God. God is in charge of everything, and God causes everything, and God is." And of course, the Pope was right from the metaphysical point of view. But from the physical point of view, he didn't quite catch up, because the apple fell out of the tree on Mr. Newton and many other things that he created, and the Pope was not harmonious with it. Actually, it wasn't the Pope himself, it was the College of Cardinals, who had the Jesuits and so forth, who hadn't quite caught up with what the scientific community of the world was doing. Today, they say we shouldn't clone people. The pessimists say, we should not clone people. If we start cloning people, we'll have a world filled with people that we understand, people who have a certain knowledge. And if they don't have knowledge, we'll put the gene of knowledge in them. And if people don't have the ability to reproduce, we'll give them the sex gene and put it in them. If people don't have the ability to have enough insulin in the system, we'll give them the insulin gene that creates insulin to an adequate amount in their body, and on and on and on. Now, why would anyone object to having things on earth, having things in their body, which would be beneficial? Where did the thought first come from to have a beneficial attitude in the body or a beneficial condition? Well, all of us have that. We all would like to have perfect eyes. We'd like to have a perfect hearing. We'd like to have perfect speaking. We'd like to have a perfect digestive system. We'd like our heart to be in perfect order. We'd like everything about us to be fantastic. Now, would you spend any amount of money that you had to spend on making yourself better? Would you go get the finest glasses you could get? Would you get the laser treatment if it were available to you? Would you do that and have your eyes adjusted by the laser act? My God, you're fooling around with Mother Nature. You're messing around with God. God created the body, and if he meant for the body to smoke, he would have put a chimney in there, you know? You know the rationalization of all these things that have come down through the years. Yeah. And they try to make an abomination of everything which is not what they believe is acceptable, which is quite interesting, quite interesting. Little boys are supposed to hit other little boys. Little girls are supposed to act demure and wear dresses. Two people of the same sex should never have anything to do with each other sexually. That's just not acceptable in the scheme of things, because God does not want that to happen. And of course, if God didn't want something to happen, what would happen? God wouldn't create these things happening. I'm not saying we're for or against cloning, we're for or against drinking alcohol, we're for or against doing any things that might limit our body. I'm just saying that this is a matter of choice. It's a matter of what effect do you want to come from the experience that you're involving yourself in. What sort of an optimistic idea are you going to come from? Now, there is a current fad going on to put into corn, wheat, and various other vegetables, carrots, lettuce, tomatoes, genes which will provide that vegetable with all of the known vitamins that are desirable for the body, all the known nutrients and all the known other things in each one of these different growing crops, and then make it available to people, not only in third world countries, but in this country. So there is a great anxiety over this. The pessimists say, you can't do that, you're fooling with Mother Nature. And there's a great hue and cry saying it should not be done. Somehow the optimists continue to pursue the subject. The optimists continue to go on the subject. How interesting it is that some of the rich people who were opposed to various things, when they themselves had a physical anomaly that needed to be handled through some of the very drugs that they opposed, they're one of the first ones to use those drugs. And where do they go and use those drugs? Anyone tell me? Out of the country. They don't use it in their own country, because they had put up such a hue and cry against it, saying that it was not right, that they certainly could not use it in their own country, which was silly for them to close that door for themselves. But pessimists do that. Pessimists often close the door for themselves for their highest good, because a pessimist doesn't realize what he's doing. We can do things at a given time, whereas later we find that we wish we hadn't done it. Have you ever done that? I think everyone has. Now, an optimist, instead of worrying over it, he just said, well, I changed my mind. But you were so against it before. I have changed my mind. But you didn't. Hey, look, can I change my mind? Yeah, but what difference does it make if I had another opinion a little while ago? Now I have a new opinion. Can I change my mind? Well, I guess you can. You see, we're held to these opinions that we once held. And we're held to, not that they make any sense, not that they're beneficial, but we're held to it just because we're held to it. Now, that's silly. And yet, that is how a pessimist works. That's how pessimism works in our life. And we don't really need pessimism in our life. We don't need pessimism to encourage us to think of new opportunities and new growth. They say that during each war, the inventive genius of humanity increased some tremendous percent, something like 300 or 400% over what it would do on a normal program. That's interesting, isn't it? Now, why did it increase? Because the pessimists were tied up. The pessimists were not allowed to be pessimists. If you say one thing against what we're doing, the munitions factories and the this and that, you're anti your country, you know? You're against your country. And you can't afford to be against your country because you really love your country, but you don't necessarily love everything that it does. And you see, this is a difficult thing too. If you love your country and you support your country and your country starts doing some silly thing, do you have the right to object? Yes, you do. Do you have a right to object when it is in a war, when it is in a difficult circumstance? You better be careful, because people are going to run down on you and get angry at you. Can you imagine, and you've seen this in the movies, Joe and Robert are having a big boxing match. They're in the big arena in Madison Square Garden in New York, and they're having a fight. And then out of the audience, as clear as a bell, Robert's sweetheart says, "Robert, don't get your face punched in." And just at that moment, he lost his guard. He dropped his guard, and the guy comes, pow, and just splatters his brains. Now, why would she shout out like that? Why would she protest? This is a pessimist. Protest pessimist. It is someone who is not thinking what they're doing. When you are correcting one of the children in the family, and then the wife or husband comes along and says, "Oh, that was all right. They could do that." And your effectiveness as a parent at that moment died. Parents must always stick together in working with their children. Always have a united front. Not that they always have to agree on everything. They can have discussions in which they can have disagreements. But when discipline is being encouraged, it has to have a united front. Now, why is that important? Discipline is a time of no discussion. Discipline is a time where all of the discussions, all of the talk, all of the thinking, all of the reasoning is no longer active. Now is the time when whatever the family decision is, whatever the rule is, whatever the law is, that's what's carried out. It's not a time for discussion. For instance, if you're driving your car 35 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone, and you know that they're going to change that zone. In fact, they're in the city hall right now changing that zone. And you get caught, you're violating the rule. Even though tomorrow, at the same time, the rule will say it is a 35 mile an hour speed limit. You follow me? Whatever rules are extant at the time that you are doing whatever you're doing, those are what affect your life. Those are what bring happiness or joy or sadness into your life. Now, a pessimist would say, "Oh, they're always after me. They're always giving me a hard time. They're always running me down. They're always..." And an optimist would say, "I jumped the gun. It's not until tomorrow that that rule is passed. So, thank you, officer, for reminding me." The optimist, he doesn't get a ticket. The pessimist, he gets a ticket. "Ah, you're always on my back. You're always trying to give me a hard time. You're always stopping me." And the cop says, "Well, we're stopping you once again." You see, being an optimist is such a joyful thing, such a rewarding thing, such a harmonious thing. You feel so good about yourself. Now, why do you feel good about yourself? You feel good about yourself because it's your nature. It's your nature to be harmonious. It's your nature to be good. It's your nature to enjoy the abundance of the universe. It's your nature. And when you don't do it, then what happens? Then you are going against your very nature. Now, what does nature mean? Does that mean something that we are caused to do that we have no control over? Or does that mean that that is a learned experience of things that are beneficial for us that we want to carry out? More likely the latter. A group of learned experiences that are beneficial for us. That's our nature. Is it your nature to be inquisitive? Hey, that's another story, isn't it? If our nature is to be inquisitive, is that something we've learned? Well, you can unlearn it, so therefore you can learn it. You can learn not to be so inquisitive, not to be so curious, and you can learn to be more curious. Curiosity is a learned thing. It comes natural for many people, but really it's a learned thing. So it is with optimism. Optimism is a learned thing. If you want to be an optimist, if you want to have a happy, harmonious, joyful, fulfilling life, if you want to always think the positive, think in the, accentuate the positive attitude, hey, you can do that. You're going to run into a lot of blocks, because every time there's one standing up there, there's someone ready to shoot it down. Every time there's one standing up there, there's somebody ready to shoot it down. Every time there's somebody standing up there, there's somebody ready. Now, if I say that often enough, you're going to believe it. Is it true?
Whatever I create, whatever I think.
Whatever you think. Whatever you think. It has nothing to do with true or false, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever you put into your consciousness, that's what you experience. Now, what do you want to experience? Do you want to experience that everything you think about is a positive, beautiful thing, and it works? Do you want to think about every person in your world is a desirable, fabulous person? Sounds good, doesn't it? Do you want to think these things? If you want to think these things, think them. Be an optimist. Think harmonious about everything. And that's what happens. Think harmonious about everything, and that's what happens. Why can we go around thinking negative things and think that we're doing so good? Well, this has been part of our training. You've been trained from child on to say no to things, to say no to drugs, to say no to drinking, to say no to cigarettes, to say no to sex, to say no to these things. You've been taught this all your life. Very interesting. And what have you done? You said no to them, or yes. And when you said no, you felt bad. Why did you feel bad? Because it's our nature to say yes. It's our nature to always say yes. And so if we are going against our nature, now what is our nature? That is the naturalness of us that likes to be positive, that likes to be an optimist, that likes to be harmonious with life. That's just us. Now, is that you? Is that you that likes to be harmonious? Is that you that likes to be positive? Think about it. We had a great talk this morning talking about the area of our mind, the area of being a master, the area of what it means to be a master, and what you do with your body when you decide to take off from this planet. Do you leave your body behind? Do you create your body like Yogananda did in that glass vault so it could be appreciated? Everyone could look at Yogananda and say, isn't he a nice guy? What is the purpose of coming here? To remember who you are, be yourself and have fun. And when you've remembered who you are,
then I'm myself and have fun.
Then you're yourself and have fun. And then you move on to other experiences. Now, you're playing chess. And you're playing a good game of chess. And you finish the chess game. Do you remember who you played chess with? You might. You say, he played a good game of chess, or she played a good game of chess. You don't say that Anita played a good game of chess, or that Ingeborg played a good game of chess. You just say they played a good game of chess. You were into the chess game. You were not thinking that Anita plays better chess than Button. You weren't thinking that at all. You were thinking that that was a good game of chess. Each one standing on its own. Can any chess game be more exciting than another? If it is, it's because we are not giving our best to the game. When we play it to the best of our ability, then great things happen. But when we play it inefficiently or insincerely, then the game is no fun, okay? That's the same with the game of life. Why are you here? Why did you create a human body? Why did you create a human life? Why did you create emotions? Why did you create all these things for yourself? And again, is to remember who we are. Once we remember who we are, then what? Basta. The game is over. It's not sadly the game is over. The game is just over. When you have done your best and someone has won, the game is over. We, unfortunately, don't always give our best to everything. And because we don't give our best to everything, what happens? It's not exciting. It's not fun. And we do a half-baked job. And when we do a half-baked job, which you think of for a master is impossible, when we do a half-baked job, what happens? When we do a half-baked job, then it is not a satisfying situation. Now here's the point. When we do a half-baked job, then we leave our body here. We may drift away from our body, we may be gone, and we just leave that corpus delicti lying right where it is, and we think, well, you know, big deal. But when we have done our spiritual work perfectly, when we have moved into our spiritual dimension, then it is as though we were never there. This is perhaps a new thought for some of you, but it's as though we were never there. When you're playing chess, do you remember who you played chess with? You remember the game, perhaps, but you don't necessarily remember who you played chess with. When you are driving in the car and somebody starts talking, are you always aware of who's talking? Oh, yes, I understand their voice. But are you aware of who's talking? Whose ideas are these that are being expressed? Are they your ideas or are they the ideas of someone else? You see, we live in a very wonderful world. We live in a world that's just filled with imagination and dreams and good stuff. But what do we do about it? What we do about it is we pretend that it's not our world. We pretend that we haven't created it. We pretend that it's not so. And so then we leave our bodies behind. How many people leave their body behind? Now, let's just look at it for a moment. There are 6 billion people on Earth. If every one of those 6 billion people left their body behind, we'd be burying bodies every day. Many bodies are buried, but how many cemeteries do you know about? How many cemeteries where they bury bodies are you aware of? How do they stand out? There are not enough cemeteries in the world to bury all the bodies that die every day. You say, well, so you mean a lot of people send? Well, of course they do. Of course they do. A lot of people take their bodies with them? The majority. Yes. Are they all masters? Those who take their bodies with them.
You said once 1 million.
Yep. I was talking about another subject at that time. How many ascended masters are there on the earth at any given time?
1%. 1%.
Yeah. But, Ellen, just physically and logically, which words we don't use, think of how many people there are on the face of the earth and how many graves there are on the face of the earth, anywhere. Just think of them. Are there, like for instance, how many people die every day? Lots. Say, a billion people? That's a lot of people. A billion people die every day out of 6 billion. Why? Because there's this recycling going on, constantly recycling. These people are reaching the age of movement, moving on, and they move. And many people don't even reach the age of moving on, and they move. Think about that. Where do these bodies go? Where do these creatures go? Where is this physical expression? If that's true, why aren't a lot of the saints ascended beings? Why are there tombs for all these saints? Well, just because you're a saint doesn't mean that you are not also a sinner. Just because you're a saint doesn't mean that you're put together in all areas correctly. Quite likely not. Now, this is not to belittle any of them, but it's like saying, if you are an Indy's 500 race car driver and you're a winner, and you win 6 times in a row, and they say, rah, rah, rah. Who lost? If there were 100 drivers and one wins, who lost? 99. So every race, 99 drivers lose. 99 drivers are not on top. They're the kind of drivers who leave their body behind. The one driver who wins, he takes his body with him. Why? Because it's just the way it is. It's comfortable to do so. When you are at other people's houses and you're eating their food, do you always feel good about it? Or do you feel you'd like to leave the tip, or you'd like to go buy the ice cream or pay something for it because they put out a real good spread? What do? You do nothing. You just say thank you very much. And you avoid going back there. Why do you avoid going back there? Because you're not allowed to be you. When you're not allowed to be you, that means you can't bring something. You can't bring a gift, or you can't share who you are. You have to do what their rules of the game are. Wherever I go, I always take one major gift with me that fulfills all things. Yep.
Yourself.
Myself. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Any trinket I might take along is nothing. It's myself. In Europe, we would go visit people in hospitals, and Kurt Schweiger would say, we got to take flowers. And Philip Schatz would say, we have to take a bouquet of flowers to these people. And we have to do this. I said, no. No. They probably got loads of flowers already. I'm not going there as a person. I'm going there as a practitioner. And if you go there as a practitioner, why should you bring flowers?
Flowers.
I'm sorry?
You get flowers.
That's another way of looking at it. But as a practitioner, I am going there as a technician. Can you imagine every doctor going into every patient's room and bringing them a bouquet of flowers because he has to bring them something? Garbage. He goes in there and brings himself. And he says, well, aren't we looking good today? Aren't we having a nice blood pressure? Aren't we having a nice stool movement? We are doing so beautiful. I am so proud of us. And then the nurse continues on that line. If the doctor came in to bring flowers, what would you say? Uh-oh. Trying to tell me something. That's all she writes. When our friends do something like that, when our friends bring us flowers, it can be a yes or no situation. But what do we want from our friends? What do we want from those in our world? We want from those in our world just one simple thing, and that is optimists live longer than pessimists. We want them to recognize that we're a pessimist. No. We're an optimist. We want them to recognize that we're an optimist and we like ourselves and we're having fun. Can you do that? Ingeborg, can you do that? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Just plain do it now. You're wonderful. You're fantastic. You're glorious. I love you.